Although they've been pretty infrequent this season, I make no apologies for that, I've just been really busy. This is another Football Fans Podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. People might say my life is in a rut. I'm quite happy with what I got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see a point. Things happening here. So this week it is once again St. Anthony in charge of discussing things with the guests, and he is joined this week by Matt McGlone. They discuss the current stuff around Celtic, specifically the 6-0 victory against St. Johnstone, the Salzburg game away, the linking of Brendan to Villa, Brendan saying the squad is too big, and just general current Celtic chat. That's enough of me, so I will hand over to St. Anthony, and this is St. Anthony with Matt Gould. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the banks. You see, here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leader, don't waste your time. The life will shut down and the promise is gone. It's my pleasure tonight to be joined on the latest podcast by Matt McGlone. Now, we're going to dispense with the formalities because everybody knows Matt from his time at Celtic and fanzines and t-shirts, etc. But we're going to have a wee chat here as we approach the international break about the state of the club at the moment. And the good news is a 6-0 win against St. Johnstone, 5-0 at half time. The first question he asked Matt is, what was the difference on Sunday?
Well, if you remember Sunday, the first 10-15 minutes, Celtic were kind of under the cosh a wee bit. And St. Johnstone seemed to have quite a bit of room, and they were having quite a bit of free movement around the Celtic penalty box. Then all of a sudden, we just started to play. I don't know, I mean, we've all complained about the square, the ball going back the way, and they were going sideways, and going back the way all the time, and taking ages to get a build-up going. All that seemed to disappear. And I think that, you know, James Forrest in particular, although he scored 4 goals, his running and his trickery was really good that day, and other players were playing off him. And I think Tom Rodgick as well. I mean, I think Tom handled at least 5 of the goals, and maybe 4. He was really bang on for him. But electrifying start after the first awkward 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Scott Brown, never played. I'm a big fan of Scott's, don't get me wrong, that I'm not, but maybe because, you know, the game wasn't being controlled through that particular area of the park where Scott has a particular style of play, or taking the ball, looking around, making the pass. Maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. Maybe it didn't.
The ball seemed to move quicker. For whatever the reason is, that they seem to zip along the surface. Now, I've actually got a theory, right, that, and a wee daft thing, is that but because the surface was wet, the ball moved a wee bit quicker. And I actually wonder if the new surface at Celtic Park in some ways is holding us back because it's too lush. And I know Brendan made a big play during the summer about how we'll be a better team this season because the surface is better, and it definitely looks better. But I wonder somehow if the fact that the ball doesn't maybe move along it as quick as what it does in a wet surface.
I'm not sure. I thought the grass at Celtic Park with the new hybrid pitch was very fast at the start of the season. I thought Celtic were really zipping the ball about very quickly, Parkhead. But Celtic are in control of the ground, so they can decide what length that grows to. I mean, the plastic stays the same size, and they cut it to the level the grass grows, a special sort of cutting machine. I'm not sure if that's what it was. I think, you know, I've been saying for weeks that, you know, somebody was going to get a doing somewhere down the line. And, you know, I think I actually tweeted it before the first injuries gave him the Betfred Cup. But this time it really did happen for us, and some days, you know, everything comes off for you. But I just felt the way they played, even at 5-0 up, you know, and when the guy sent off a horrible tackling, James Forrest, that could have really damaged the boy, actually.
No, I want to make a point there, actually, because there was two guys trying to do Forrest. One didn't get sent off, and another one missed. Now, that's pub league football, because you're in the professional leagues, you're in the highest tier of Scottish football. You're meant to show your class, and you're a player. This isn't some sort of amateur league that you play on a Sunday, and I mean, you're getting a doing. Mm-hmm. Then the feeling is, let's take a couple of bodies. But mm-hmm. you know, that was a shocking tackle.
It was a shocking tackle because the guy was nowhere near the ball, and he just took the man right out. It was a red card all day long. And you know, it could have hurt James. You know, I watched that game mm-hmm. last night on TV, and I think James's leg that he got hit on was just off the surface. Had he been on the surface with his weight on that, you know, he could have broke his leg mm-hmm. or maybe damaged tendons or ligaments. But I thought we stuck with it, even at 5-0 when the game's done. You know, I've spoke to a couple of footballers who've always said when it's done that way psychologically, you don't actually mean mm-hmm. not to be putting in, you know, the same effort, but it psychologically does a. It doesn't drive you on as much because you've done the business, as it were. And, mm-hmm. you know, a game's always the whole thing about football games.
And to be fair, St Johnson, they probably came out in the second half but trying to avoid a right thrash.
Aye. So, well, get in at 5-0, they're probably sitting thinking, you know, if we get
off. Damage limitation
at that. If we got off light at 70, that'd be good. Mm-hmm. But when they get the guys sent off, as I was saying, they went totally in the defence. But Celtic, you know, picked the lock again and got the goal late on. So, no, an all-round great performance. I just hope we can keep it up. And we can get the team settled down a wee bit. There's changes here and there all the time. I just think we could maybe settle down a wee bit. I'd like to see Gamboa get a wee bit more time. I thought against Partick Thistle in the League Cup a couple of months ago or 6 weeks ago or so, I thought he played really well. He made the two goals.
And I never saw him again.
But he hasn't featured since. And I'm not saying Lustig this or Lustig that. I do think that he's, you know, he's not the player he used to be, Mikel, but I don't know why Gamboa's not getting a game. It doesn't seem to make sense, especially when he came in, they played well. Mm-hmm. Is that not what happens in football? You play well, you get the next game.
So in terms of team selection for Sunday then, did you think that, but given the fact that Brown was injured, do you think that was your strongest 11 with who was available?
Well, I thought Malumba played fantastic the previous week, and although he's only on for 70 odd minutes against Aberdeen, I thought he played really well, and I thought he may have started, but you can't argue after the manager selection when you win 6-0, so who am I to argue with that? But I was a wee bit surprised with that. Mm-hmm.
And Benkovic coming in at the back, I think he's got a presence.
He's definitely got a presence, aye, and you know, he looks as if he knows exactly what he's doing. We have suffered in recent seasons having understanding at centre-back, particularly at the start of this season as well. But him and Boyata are, you know, they seem to have it sorted out at the minute. Boyata, I'm pretty sure, has been made a promise that just get the head down, stick in, you'll be away in January. I'm pretty sure that's what the deal is, because I can't imagine him turning around from being unhappy to all of a sudden saying nothing and just getting the head down. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's aiming towards a move, and he's probably been told he can get one.
The irony is, I think this is Boyata's best ever spell for Celtic. You know, he's always had a blunder in him occasionally. Probably the biggest example of that was last season at Ibrox. You know, ever since he's come back into the team, he's been faultless. He's absolutely tremendous.
I know. I remember when he came in at first, he was a bit shaky. Then he had a great spell. And they looked really good. Then another shaky spell in that game at Ibrox you're talking about, you know, when Windass, I mean, he was just dithering completely over at the Govan Stand side, and he just let Windass take the ball right off him, and he stuttered again in that first half. You remember not long after it, and I was sitting thinking it's great to take him off at half time. He's just a complete liability. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, he's in the World Cup squad and he's played really well in the World Cup. And you know, when players go to World Cups and their contracts are coming to an end, their agents get excited and they think, right, let's get you out of here while the going's good. You've just finished a great World Cup, we'll get 3 times more wages for you. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with Boyata. His agent was just beavering for a move. And but the player, you know, I'm a bit miffed at Boyata. I have to say, I'm not an easy forgiver in some situations. He could have played against AEK in Athens. And we lost silly soft goals at the back, at centre back position, and we could have been in the Champions League, I would think. But anyway, he's here. Brendan's given him a jersey, and we're all with it.
Now, James Forrest has had his critics in the past, and I think everybody knows that James Forrest on his game with that explosive pace, he's a fair finisher as well for a guy who technically is a wide player, but he can fairly cut inside and get a goal. I mean, I would love to think that this is James Forrest coming to the peak of his career.
Aye, I think so. I remember Neil Lennon tell me one time that James Forrest was always the best player in training, and I used to say, well, how come he disappeared on Saturday? But if you look at the managers that James Forrest has played under, you know, he's played under a fair few managers at Celtic. Ronnie, he's played under Gordon Strachan, I'm pretty sure. Or was it Brendan?
It was Lenny.
I think Lenny gave him his debut.
That's right.
So he's played
after Mo gets sacked.
Yeah, after Mo gets sacked, Lenny gave him his debut. So Lenny certainly believes in him, I know that. And Ronnie Delia, I always thought he was a great player. And Brendan Rodgers. So, I mean, we see them on a Saturday, and if we don't like what we see on a Saturday, we say, oh, he's rubbish or whatever. But managers and coaches see them in training 4 or 5 days a week, and they see a different picture. So if they believe in him, then so should be.
I think the frustration is that when you see how he played on Sunday, and as I said, that explosive pace, getting in behind defence, he's scoring goals, that you know, you're touching the tip of the iceberg there. There's more for James Forrest, and the hope is that he can mature into the player that we all hoped that he was going to be.
It was only a few years ago, sure, he ran his contract down and came to the end of the season and never had a contract.
Right.
You know, and he luckily never got a club over the summer, and Celtic re-signed him just, I think, at the start of the following season. So he was right to be taken by any other club. But probably somebody had said to him, you know, hang on in at Celtic, you know, you're making another wee opportunity. And he eventually got a new contract. He got a contract when he was actually out of contract. You're right, James has got a lot in his locker, and I think hopefully Sunday. I was really dying for him to get a double hat trick there, to be honest with you.
Well, we were talking about Dixie Deans, because nobody's done it since 73.
Dixie, was that against Hibs?
Thistle.
He scored 2 against Hibs in a cup game, didn't he?
Two, three.
No, I think there's a lot more to come for me, James, and he seems an honest wee guy. Celtic's his club, I think.
I like the passion when he scored the goals as well, because I don't like these players that score a goal and walk back to the halfway line in a moody sense. I mean, he was right in there in front of the supporters. You can see the delight in his face. There's been a lot of comment about a split dressing room or whatever, but there was no sign of that on Sunday.
No, there wasn't, you know, and the split dressing room thing is a strange one. I mean, I really don't know why that absolute half-wit Chris Boyd gets the platform he gets. I mean, he was coming out with us 10 days ago, and now he's back out with the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, OK, let's try and half understand where he's coming from here. You know, you look at a character like that, you think, well, where's he kind of coming from? Is it Boyata? Is the players unhappy because Boyata didn't get dealt with and get brought back into the team right away? Well, it can't be that, because when the banner was held up at Boyata at Celtic Park, they scored the winner against Hamilton Accies. Mm. Every single player ran over to him, particularly Anthony Craig Gordon. Mm-hmm. So it's not over that. Brendan said at the weekend when he was asked the question, I mean, I've got to say, Brendan shows some patience getting asked the same question all the time. Obviously they're trying to provoke a reaction from him, but he was asked again about this split in the dressing room, this supposed split in the dressing room, and I thought he was very clever, because he didn't actually answer the question the way that it was put to him. He started to talk about the size of the pool, and people have been saying, why before a game is he talking about the size of the pool? In my opinion, he was talking about the size of the pool because that gave Brendan a reason to sort of say, well, there's a lot of players in that pool that not getting a game. Mm-hmm. So if people think you'll always get grumbling, of course, players always grumble. Any good player will always grumble if he's not getting picked. Mm-hmm. So Brendan put it out that way. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty clever.
He deflected it, didn't he?
He completely deflected it. He's very clever. Brendan's quite calculated with the way he talks. He never gets into an argument. He doesn't get into a debate. He'll smile and he'll give the answer. And it's time to move on from
that. Now, talking about players that have, who the fringe players, if you like, that are not really contributing to anything, and the squad's too big. I mean, you've got DeVries in goals, you've got Gumbo at right back, you've got Scott Allen, Marvin Comper, who beggars belief that he can sign a guy in January and he plays one game, especially the wages that he's rumoured to be on. You've got Johnny Hayes, you've got Abu Kouassi, and you've got Kundai Benyu. Mm-hmm. So that's like 7 players right away off the top of my head that are contributing nothing but taking huge wages.
Yeah, well, and I think that was the part of the reason, or a good part of the reason why the hesitation was made to buy, or not to eventually buy, John McGinn. Yeah. I think Brendan has had a chat with the board, and I think the board have said, well, what about all these guys here? I counted up their wages a couple of weeks ago there when I was writing a column in the Alternative View. It came to over £200,000 a month for all those players that you had mentioned there. Mm-hmm. Because some of them came from England, and Compare came from Germany. These guys came up in big wages. And I think the situation was, is John McGinn going to walk into the first team? will know. Well, he's on 17 grand a week down there, and I think Celtic offered 14 after offering previous lower amounts. So if Celtic were looking at 14, 28, 56,000 a month, going on to that 218, then that's an awful lot of money. It's getting a bit out of control. Neil Lennon's budget in his last season was 16 million. Now, that is for transfer fees and for wages paid over that 12-month piece. Celtic's accounts came out a couple of weeks ago. Then 59 million is the player's budget.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to go from 16 to 59 and play in Scotland, where the rewards are not high if you win things, mm-hmm. the rewards are only high if you get into Europe. And it seems to me that if Celtic don't get into the Champions League, then players have got to be sold, or your highest asset player will be sold. So I think that's the reason that entire thing broke down. And I think there's no doubt about it that Brendan has had, you know, differences with Peter Lowe probably in particular, because he runs the club on a day-to-day basis, where Dermot is wherever he is in the world and only gets briefed occasionally. The board don't get briefed in these things until the monthly meetings, so they don't have a day-to-day run of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be basically between Peter Lowell and Brendan. And I think if Brendan asks for money for a player and Brendan says he's going to walk straight into the first team, then I think he'd get the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But no, you're right, your question there, you know, all these players, over 200 grand a month not playing, everybody's got a budget in their house, and you know, like a football club, it's like your house budget, you've got to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about the good stuff at St Johnson's, so we should really touch on the sad net last Thursday night in Salzburg. I missed the first half because I was driving back to Inverness, work related, and I was overjoyed to hear that we were winning, and it sounded in the radio as if we were... We weren't in control, but we didn't seem to be under too much pressure. And when I got back into the house and I saw the second half, I was horrified, because it was the same old, same old. It was the inability to retain possession, the buckling under pressure, and just that inevitable feeling that you just think, we're not going to be able to hold out here.
You know, I was really, really disappointed. I mean, I think as Celtic fans, we all get disappointed at defeats, but I've got to say, on Friday, all day Friday, it was a complete downer. Because at half time, I was really quite pleased. I thought, great first goal, took it well. We've defended very well in the first half. We've thrown bodies in front of the ball. We're chasing, harrying. We're doing our best for the ball not to go in the net, as you would do. And you're thinking, you're over in Salzburg, they're a great team. They haven't lost for 3 or 4 months, and we're beating them 1-0. That's pretty good. And then the second half, it went back to horror European displays that we've watched over season after season after season. We can't hold the ball, we can't pass to a teammate, we're caught out of position, we're letting making silly defensive errors, we're letting goals in that were avoidable. And it just seemed like, you know, we became a team like a provincial team that we would play in Scotland. That's what we seem to be like in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So you wonder, you know, it's almost a psychological thing.
Well, is it psychological or is it technique? If it's psychological, then maybe they should get some shrinks in to sort of speak to the players and get their minds around it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the Scottish football mentality of the way we play sometimes is outthought in Europe. Faster pace, clever players. But when you look at Salzburg's wage bill, you know, it's lower than ours.
I know. You know, that's concerning.
That's concerning, and their wages are probably about a third, or maybe a half, of what our players get.
Mm-hmm.
Less. So you have to say to yourself, well, we're kind of narrowing down where the problem might be here. Are we not signing the right people? Do we not have the right mentality to play in Europe? Is Scottish football holding us back because we play that the majority of the time? Or are we not bringing on the proper players? I suppose it's got to be a sprinkling of all of that. But I just felt the Salzburg defeat, it was a real downer. It wasn't just another defeat. It was a signal, it was a message that we haven't progressed in Europe at all.
I have to say, my heart went out to the boy Henry, because he's been having a hard time off an element of the fans recently. And it has to be said that his performances haven't been great, and his confidence seems shot. So the fact that when I heard he was playing, my heart sank the other night, because I know that they're limited in terms of the personnel. You know, Simonu was on the bench, wasn't he?
He was on the bench. I mean, he hasn't played for months.
Yeah, so Ayer's injured, Benkovic was injured. You know, so we're a bit compare. We're a bit cursed in that respect. But the point I'm trying to make here is that when a player continues to play in the team and make blunders and cost you goals, then he's not really the problem at that point. It's the manager selecting that becomes the problem.
Well, I mean, the first part of the question there was we had nobody else to play. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing.
Well, you mentioned Gamboa. It may have been a better idea to put Lustig in the middle.
Well, that's always the option, isn't it? Lustig's played in the middle before, and he's looked reasonably comfortable there. He's got the height, and, you know, he can play there. And Gamboa could have moved in there. But again, Gamboa not playing seems to be a mystery. There must be something we don't know about, because it can't be purely on form. If it is, then it's a bigger mystery. But for Jack Hendry, for me, I feel that bringing a boy in from Dundee, he's never played in Europe before, never played with that kind of class of player before, never played constantly under pressure before, and as much as, of course, there's sort of relegation pressure with a team like Dundee, but a winning pressure is a different kind of pressure where the expectation is really high. Where at Dundee, a lot of people might say, well, the kind of players that are around about you, you're not expected to do much anyway. But Celtic, it's the opposite. You are expected to do a lot. So I just felt that from the start, it should have been better sort of recruitment, and that Jack Hendry should have been brought along, he should have been coached, he should have been nursed, he should have been given a minder, he should have been looked after, he shouldn't have been playing in every game, he should have been brought into the team gradually and introduced, but he's been thrown in there, as you say, and when you're thrown in like that, you know, the inevitable's going to happen if you don't have the experience.
I think the worrying thing for me is that I know when Lennon was the manager, whoever was scouting the players, whether it was Lennon or John Park or whoever, or whether it was a collective, I mean, you were getting guys like Gary Hooper and Bairn Kyle, you were getting Virgil van Dijk, you were getting Victor Wanyama, and I'm willing to confess that I'd never heard of these guys really. I knew very little about them, but as soon as they came in, you could see these guys are quality players, and they moved up a level and moved on. Now they were coming from markets that you know, fairly low key here. They weren't costing us a fortune in transfer fees, and I wonder if we've lost that a wee bit, because we seem to get back to Gordon Strachan days, but it's just like the SPL, you know, we signed Bain and we signed Hendry, we signed Johnny Hayes, we're supposed to be after Scott McKenna. I want to see Celtic, you know, go to Holland or go to the Croatia or somewhere like that, but there's maybe a better value of player to be had for a lesser price.
Well, I've always thought to Europe, I mean, Croatia seems to be a place where you get a decent player for a decent price. Scandinavia has always been a situation like that. We've seen a few Scandinavians. I just don't get it. I mean, we should be looking at different markets. The players that you mentioned there were brought in under a different scout, John Park, and most Celtic managers had a good relationship with John. I don't think Ronnie did towards the end. I think Neil did for quite a lot of the time, or maybe all of the time, but obviously he didn't have maybe he did for a decent relationship with Brendan, but Brendan wanted to bring his own man in, Congerton. Who was that, if I'm correct here, was that Sunderland, and was there and took them down two consecutive seasons?
And there was actually an article on Celtic Underground a few months back, and it was a Sunderland fan telling Celtic fans about his reservations about Congerton, because the Sunderland have been in a downward spiral for some time, but you know, some of the players that he was signing and the recruitment was questionable, to say the least.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the proof's in the pudding, and the players you mentioned there were all signed, or most of them were signed under John Park. And now we've got Lee Congerton. So he is the guy who goes around maybe with a couple of other scouts assisting him, looking at games. Where does he go? I mean, who does he look at? His record is nowhere as good as John Park's, and no, John Park's been put out of the building. So, but it seems that Brendan thinks a lot of Lee Congerton, and I don't know how long it will go that we can have a wage bill over £200,000 a month for players that not even in the squad, but you know, they're not even like on the subs bench. So yeah, that seems to be a concern. All of these things add up to us not being as good this season as we have been the two previous seasons. I always think, be like Barcelona, not that we can be like Barcelona, but be like Barcelona in such a way that when you're winning and you're on top, make changes.
Strengthen.
You can't sit back and say, we've won two double trebles and expect to win three double trebles and expect to win four trebles. You can't expect to do that and not change, nip and tuck and improve on the journey. You only get to two double trebles because you've been making improvements. You don't just suddenly get to three or hope for four if you haven't made changes. Because the team that did it the year before, there's always players that get older, mm-hmm. players that get off form, players who move. You have to keep moving. And I don't think we kept moving in the right direction, player purchase-wise, get into the third season.
No, I quite agree with you there. But the other thing I find worrying is that the people keep talking a bit with optimism about the January transfer window. Now, the problem with the January transfer window is clubs who are going for trophies are never going to sell their best players. And even clubs that are fighting relegation don't want to lose their best players to the end of the season because they want to stay up. Now, I'm struggling here. I was thinking the other day there that who was the last player we signed in a January transfer window that really made a difference to the team? And I think it was Craig Bellamy, which is something like 14 years ago.
And he was on loan.
And he was only on loan. Now, you have to admit that was an inspired bit of business mm-hmm. because Bellamy carried the team towards the end of the season. Uh-huh. And
Roy Keane as well. Robbie Keane came in around the same time, wasn't
mm-hmm. it? Mm-hmm. So, they two guys were loan signings, mm-hmm. and the hope was that mm-hmm. they would stay, but I think mm-hmm. being realistic, we knew that they were only uh-huh. going to get 6 months out of them. Mm-hmm. But you know the point I'm making? But because uh-huh. anybody who's relying in Celtic to go in January and spend buy two or three quality players, it's well nigh impossible in January.
No, I know. I mean, I don't have any great hope that we're going to do fantastic well with regards to signings in January, partly for that reason and partly because I think we're going to have to shift players out the door here. The wage bill at Celtic Park, £59 million, for Scottish football is not sustainable. It is not sustainable. And because Celtic have, had the problems 24 years ago, there is a wee bit of, sort of awareness around Celtic Park that we can't ever go near that again. Of course, we're nowhere near that. Let's get that crystal clear. We're nowhere near that. But you can't go in consecutive seasons running a club in Scottish football with a £59 million wage bill and expect to, just win things in Scotland. So, because there's no money really from winning things in Scotland. Money comes from high transfers, buying cheap, selling high, and getting Champions League money. That's where you get money from. Mm-hmm. But you're right, January transfer window. That rate will give Benefits until maybe the rest of the season, but I think there's a clause in his contract. He said himself that he could go back in January to Leicester City if they want him. Mm-hmm. If they had an injury crisis, I think they can do it. Same as the way we get rid of Masunda. There was a clause there, we could get rid of him at the end of the season there, although he only came in January.
See, there's another example I've seen that didn't come off. And this is becoming a bit of a worry because a pattern is beginning to emerge.
Well, you'll run out of money if you keep doing that because, mm-hmm. You can't keep signing players and not playing them and paying all these wages out. So, yeah, it is a concern, and that goes back down to between Brendan and his chief scouts. He's got to sit down with his chief scout in particular, and he then has a couple of assistants, obviously, because he can't watch every game, and say, right, we've signed this guy, not working, we've signed that guy, not working. We can't go too many signing these guys mm-hmm. not working because we need a team, and some of these guys have got to work. Mm-hmm. Some of them have worked, and some of them are young, Lewis Warden's young, Jack Hendry's young, as the boy from Australia. He wasn't even registered, and two pools of 45 players uh-huh. for the Europa group stages. There was an A and a B pool, and he didn't even make it into them. I'm just wondering if, because he was obviously not Brendan signing, it's the board looking at a player and thinking, we get him, I know he's on loan, but there seems to be some cosy type arrangement with Manchester City.
I was just about to say that. I mean, the players we've had to Man City, I have to say, most of them have done is a good turn the last couple of seasons. When you think of Patrick Roberts, when you think of Boyata, when you think of Jason Denier, who were terrific players.
Aye, we haven't really had... what we're having the same day here, but I don't think we've had
John Guidetti.
Josh, well, he was okay.
He
did well, but these players always look at their success here because of where they've came from. They look at their success in Scotland and they mark themselves up for a move elsewhere, usually to Europe, and that he went to Spain, didn't he? Interesting that Paddy Roberts and Stuart Armstrong are warming the benches at both our clubs at the minute.
You know, I find that happening because I was a huge fan of the two.
I know, but you know, they're in a different league now. Spanish league and the English league Premiership is obviously far better than the Scottish league. Is it because, you know, there's more competition over there? Is it because they haven't settled because they've only been there a matter of months? Or is it because they're maybe not as good as they think they are to get a game every week in that particular higher league?
But to be fair, they're not joining Real Madrid and Barcelona or Man City and Man United. They're playing for mediocre teams.
Yeah, but they're playing against these teams though. Playing against higher teams,
higher calibre,
so you're not in as good a team. But if you're not really showing it against a higher team, then you're not really doing yourself much favour. But you know, Stuart Armstrong, I feel, was I like Stuart. I thought he was a good player for Celtic, but he's what I call a career footballer. He has got no particular affiliation to Celtic other than to go up the ladder, move on, and get a move. I suppose moving for about between £10,000 and £12,000 a week at Celtic to a reported £35,000 a week. You know, these guys are they're careerists. You know,
I was going to say mercenaries there. I don't mean that as an insult, but I suppose what I'm trying to say is they're professionals. And as you said there, if he doesn't have any allegiance to Celtic and he gets an offer to treble his wages somewhere, then for him it's a no-brainer.
He's a career footballer. He sees football as his career, and he can sit back at the end of his career and say, well, I made X amount of millions and I played for such and such, but I never had a particular affiliation to any. I think football's full of guys like that. But you compare him to Kieran Tierney, who could go any day of the week and at least quadruple his wages. If it's about money, Kieran Tierney could go. But KT is a Celtic fan, he loves the club, he loves winning, he identifies with the supporters in a way that we haven't seen players only for such a long
decades.
Time, for decades. And you know, you're not going to get 11 KTs, that's obvious. But he's a great shining example, he's a fantastic example to youngsters. Brought up my wee grandson Ben, he's 7. And if Kieran Tierney left Celtic, that wee boy's going to be devastated.
Well,
he's a great example.
We need to be realistic at some point. There's a good chance that he maybe won't try his luck down soon.
No,
but hopefully not for maybe 2 or 3 years yet.
No, definitely. He's very young. And I actually think Kieran Tierney wants to be here for 10. Let's get for the 10. And I don't think any Celtic fan would be unkind towards Kieran if he stayed for 10. Still 2.5 years, nearly 3 years.
Definitely.
You know, and you could say, well, you know, the boy's done well. If it was about money, he could have moved ages ago. He stuck by the jersey, he stuck by the cause, and he knows 10's very important to us. You and I are no 21 anymore, and to get to 10, we know that that will never, ever be equaled or beaten.
The other thing as well is, like, I wonder if fans these days are a wee bit more realistic than we were, because certainly, personally speaking, I was brought up in the tail end of the lines, and I can remember Louis McCarrie going to Man United and my dad not being that bothered because he still had Harry Hood and Dixie Deans and Kenny Dalglish. So Lou, with all due respect, was either a loss. But in later years, when Kenny left and then when Charlie Nicholas left and maybe even when Brian McClair left, we were distraught. But because we still saw Celtic as being in the great bracket of clubs in world football. But I think these days, purely and simply because of the TV money that's been offered down in England and the big leagues, then I think maybe the younger boys have got very realistic. And the turnover of players as well is greater now than it used to be.
We see all those players you mentioned are all homegrown. You know, we're bringing in good players now that are not homegrown. You know, and they don't particularly have an affiliation to feel like, you know, they have to be around Celtic for a long time. It's a disappointment. I mean, I remember Kenny leaving, you know, and I remember players leaving all over since, great Celtic players. And unfortunately, it's because we play in Scotland, that's going to be for the foreseeable future.
That's a drawback, definitely.
That's a complete drawback. I mean, teams coming up, I think Fulham came up this year for the Championship, and I think they get something like £127 million Well, Celtic's money for winning the Scottish SPL last year was 2.8 million.
I know, that's crazy.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's more than 50 times the money.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you compete? You know, we are buying players from Europe because a couple of things. We've got a great reputation as a club and a great history. Plus, we're giving players the platform like, what do you call them? Busser, sorry, there's a mental blank there. The Busser, somebody else in my mind. We're giving a platform to Musser, who's at Fulham and come the end of the mm-hmm. he's sort of training contract, the £500,000 training contract. And Celtic are sort of saying to him, you come here, couple of years, you're in the shop window, you're playing the Champions League, you're not going to get us at Fulham, and then he's off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that's a wee market for us there to get these guys. Yeah. Otherwise, we're not going to get them with the money that's in the English Premiership. Clubs down south don't really need to rely too heavy on their gates.
Mm.
I mean, if most clubs are getting over 100 million just for staying in the.
You're getting to the situation now down in England that the fans are irrelevant now. Mm-hmm. Because the thing that keeps Celtic going is we get 55,000-60,000 people every week who are paying through the turnstiles. But it's not just that as well, because any advertising that we get or any commercial deals, it's on the back of having a big fan base, mm-hmm. because having a big fan base makes you attractive mm-hmm. to advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas down in England now, they get that much for the TV money, mm-hmm. they can turn to the supporters and say, mm-hmm. "We don't, you know, you're irrelevant."
I remember Berlusconi, who's one of the first guys to sort of get football going on TV over in Italy, and he was involved in Milan, obviously. And he, I don't know, it was about 15, 20 years ago maybe. And he said at the time, in 15, 20 years' time, we'll actually be letting fans in for free or giving them bonuses and incentive maybe to come to the game.
Huge discounts.
And we might not be, well, the thing is, a lot of the football grounds down south are not huge. You know, you get Everton 40,000, Fulham mm-hmm. 25,000-30,000, Crystal Palace maybe the same. They're not big giant arenas.
Well, even the Bournemouths and Brightons in the world, these are no big clubs.
Yeah, well, what's Bournemouth? 18,000, 20,000?
Apparently, Hibs and Tynecastle and Easter Road, Hibsmere and Bournemouth.
Aye, so there you go. So, I think if there was a collapse in Sky Football, I'd love Sky Football to collapse. You know why? Because we would be in a better position than the majority English Premier League.
It would make it more a level playing field for the.
Well,
the,
you know, we'd.
For us, for definitely.
Well, they'd have to get by the way we get by on the gates.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we get. Obviously, it's a nice wee bonus to get Champions League money, mm-hmm. and this year it would have been about 38 million, up quite a bit from last year. But we haven't got that. But on a level playing field, there's no big deals with Sky. We are far better off than the vast majority of English teams.
Mm-hmm.
Vast majority, because we live off our gates and the money that the club make through merchandising, etc., that surround the whole Celtic empire.
So, one of the big teams in England that are doing so well is Aston Villa. They found themselves down in a championship, down a tier below, and they've sacked Steve Bruce after an indifferent start to the season. Which is kind of ironic, because that's where John McGinn ended up, you know, isn't he? He scored a great goal a couple of weeks ago, but by all accounts, things are not working out so well for him. But according to the newspapers, or according to one particular newspaper, Brendan's in a short lead of three for the Aston Villa job. So all I would put out there and say is, would Brendan Rodgers be seriously be interested in dropping down to the second tier in English football after the managerial pedigree that he's had so far?
Well, a direct straight answer to that is no. I wouldn't think so. There'd be three reasons that would maybe make you want to move. One, that you're unhappy at Celtic, which I don't believe he is. I don't believe he's the happiest guy in the world at the minute. I don't think he's desperately unhappy that it's not workable. I think everything in life's workable if both parties make an attempt to do something. Compromise is everything. Compromise solves wars, it solves conflicts. Compromise can solve any difference that's going on at Celtic Park this time. So that's one reason. I don't think he's dead unhappy. Second reason is ambition to go back down to England to manage a team which are not in the top 18, 19 teams in England.
Mm.
You know, a team, Brendan said on Sunday that.
At the moment, they're probably the 30th best team in England, given the league table.
Aye. So, you know, Brendan said, that was meaning out with the 18, 19 that's in the Premiership.
Mm-hmm.
But Brendan said yesterday that Aston Villa are a Premier League club in name. What he means is by their history, by their support, and by their stature in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
The way the club is going at the minute, they're not a Premier League team. So, The second reason, would he go because he wanted to go back down to England? I would say no. So the first one, I don't think he's desperately unhappy at Celtic, although he's not as happy as he has been. Second one, he's not going to a better team or a better, a bigger, better club. And thirdly, is it money? Would it be money? Well, as we seem to know, I think he's probably maybe taken into Premiership managers. He's probably in the top 8 or 10 English Premiership managers for wages, for high wages. So, I mean, let's say Villa offered him 4 million. Well, Brendan's got a lot going here. I mean, he's got the 10 dangling in front of him. Mm-hmm. He's got a fanatical support that love him. Well, I know some people maybe not in love with him as much as they were, but overall, the support love Brendan. So why would you want to leave here? Where do you go if it doesn't work out at Villa? No, I can't think of Brendan leaving to go to Aston Villa. And if he did, I don't think it would be for reason 2 and 3. I think it would be because he has maybe thought there's some kind of problem at Celtic Park that we don't know about that he finds he can't solve. I don't think it would be for moving to England. I don't think it would be for money.
No. The one thing is that if the worst should happen this season and everything blows up in our face, then I don't doubt for a minute they'll move on at that point, because the link will be broken with the success, if you like.
Right.
But the point I want to make is that given everything that happened during the summer, and given the fact that we didn't spend money on players for whatever reason, I'm sure we targeted players but we couldn't get the deals over the line, then I think Peter Lovell should be careful, because if it does blow up, then he will be seen by the supporters as culpable as anybody.
Peter Lovell will be seen as being culpable, there's no doubt about it, as will Brendan, due to the signings he's made and he hasn't played, and also due to the fact that we've got good enough players to win this league. So, you know, there's no reasons why we shouldn't be winning this league.
No.
And from the position where Rangers are over these last recent years, and at the start of the season, they've brought in free transfer players, they've brought in loan players, they've brought in players who didn't cost an awful lot of money. And I can't imagine they're on hell of a high wages, won't be on some of the wages that our guys are getting. So there's no way they should be near beating us this season. No way whatsoever. But on the Peter Lovell question, the way our club is structured, you have a board that meet every month, so they're not involved in day-to-day stuff. You have Dermot, who's not sure if he lives in the Maldives, the Seychelles, Ireland, or wherever he lives, but he's not here day-to-day. He's got loads of businesses he gives his time to. So what he does is he has a chief executive who knows Peter Lawwell, and he, up to this interview anyway, is trusting him. So he is the only guy who can say, I don't want Peter Lawwell here. The fans might not want Peter Lawwell here. Brendan might not want him there. But the only person that can stop Peter Lawwell being here is a decision made by Dermot Desmond.
Mm-hmm. Well, you touched upon that, the fact that we should be far ahead of Rangers, etc.
Miles ahead, we should be.
But I think what's obvious this season is, and looking at it objectively in terms of the Scottish game, it's maybe not a bad thing. You've got so many teams challenging at the top. So Hearts, we're having a good wee run there, now they've been reined in a wee bit. Hibs are playing some brilliant stuff under Neil Lennon. And then you've got us, you've got Rangers, you've got Kilmarnock who are doing well, and you've got Livingston that are punching well above their weight. So what kind of title race do you foresee this season? Is it going to be tighter, or will it be a case of by the new year that a gap begins to emerge between maybe us and probably Rangers?
I think that you mentioned Livingston there. They've done pretty well. I watched their game recently last Sunday there when they beat Rangers. And for a team that's been cobbled together just with loads of free transfers and guys on less than 700 or 800 quid a week, they've done fantastically well. But I mean, you just have to look at the way football goes historically. These teams do tail off. Hibs are a very good team. Neil has put together a team there again of free transfers, low purchasing finance players. But when you've got a spirit in football, and you've got a want, and you've got a team group who are all together, and you've got that enthusiasm to win and please the fans, and you haven't had success very long. I know they won the Scottish Cup and it wasn't Daniel, but when you haven't had continued success, then you have this power, this drive, and that's what they've got at Hibs. you know, Hearts to a certain extent, but I think Hearts have been quite lucky for some reasons, you know. I mean, we had a vastly changed team put out against them at Tynecastle. We had the European game in Athens a couple of days later, but you know, I don't have any fear in going through to Murrayfield or whatever. Play Hearts wherever we want to play them and we'll beat them. I don't have any fear there, and maybe too much has been made about the Murrayfield thing. I think the problem with the Murrayfield decision was the structure and the way it was handled. There was no discussion. 1 minute you're playing two games at Hampden that same day, next minute we're through in Edinburgh. Excuse me, could you mind just explaining how that was found to be? Can you just tell us how you got to that decision? And that's what the problem seems to be there, you know, that they just made the decision and nobody was consulted, and Celtic's game was shifted and they weren't consulted and told why.
I like to cut him off from onwards the other day there when he was talking, and he says, you know, we're the champions, but if we play the way we can play, we will beat any team in this league. And that gave me a wee bit of heart, because, you know, we were crying out for something like Sunday, for the team to come out with a bit of fight spirit, a bit of passion, and more so than that, to show that, to stamp the class on the game, and that's something that we did. So that's something that we're going to look for not just for one game. We need to carry that forward.
No, definitely, but yes, it's got to be carried on. That's crucial. But in saying that, you've got to start somewhere, and the somewhere was on Sunday there. I mean, if you look at it, you know, when we played Rangers, you know, that was 1-0, good on 4-5-6. I'm not just saying that it's because I'm a Celtic fan. You watch that game, I mean, the first half they could hardly get over the halfway line. And I think if we were to, all this hype, Rangers are hyped out of their mind at the minute. You know, they beat Rapid Vienna there, and they're quite lowly in the league in Austria, whereas Salzburg are the top of the league. But Rangers are running on hype. Hype doesn't get you 3 points. It will never get you 3 points. But they're running on hype at the minute. And I think that if we were to play Rangers tomorrow, the bookies would give you heavy favourites for Celtic to beat Rangers at Ibrox in the next game. So, yeah, I think it will settle down. I think we will be the champions. Hopefully we'll maybe nip and tuck a wee bit in January. That's debatable at the minute, obviously. But the players we've got at the club are good enough to win that league. And as I said earlier, we shouldn't even be in the position we're in just now. We should be miles ahead of them, considering the structure, the finance, and the good, the feel-good factor about the club, which unfortunately is the feel-good factors went a fair bit this year amongst most, quite a lot of fans. But with the champions, and Malumba talks very strongly of the feeling in the dressing room, and we can keep heart, soul and mind together, then we'll be champions, and who knows, another treble.
Well, that's the plan, certainly that's the plan. So on that happy note, I think the thoughts of another treble, that's just to say thanks very much for your time, Matt, and all the best for the future.
Pleasure, thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that podcast, and it's at this point that I say the usual thing of there'll be more podcasts along shortly, and there will be more podcasts along shortly. As I've been saying the last couple of ones, the just general life getting in the way of things. Make sure you go on the Celtic FC Foundation website and have a look at the events that are coming up. Obviously, we're approaching the busy time of year, one of the times of year when the foundation really excels itself by making Christmas an event that people can enjoy in many families across the East End of Glasgow. And in order to raise the funds to make that happen, they need people like you and I to work and contribute towards it. So there is the Foundation Sleep Out, which is coming up shortly. And if you go on the Celtic FC Foundation website, you can find out more about that, how you can register, and how you can participate in a sleep out at Celtic Park. Anyway, enough of me. That was him, St Anthony, with him, Matt McGlone. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
in this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.